Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year, year and a half, and they've done great, great work. They're honest. They're upfront. They can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You could give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff. Happy holidays, everybody. We want to thank our sponsor, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, All-American Used Cars and Trucks, and I want to thank my good friend, Mr. Tony D. Viss. Happy holidays, Mr. Viss.
Happy holidays, Marty. It's that time of the year. We just celebrated our immediate family Christmas the past few days here, so it's been good. In fact, still have some that are sneaking out here shortly. But yeah, it's a great time of the year. Enjoy seeing the grandkids open up gifts. And so, yeah, looking forward to tonight.
Good. Nobody got mad because they got socks and threw them across the room or anything like that, did they?
No, I think the socks they got had I got a pair, so I have Alabama. I'm trying to remember what else the other ones got, but they had, you know, like team socks.
Sure.
Yeah, so I think they're okay with
it. Okay, they were good with it. Well, very nice. So yeah, we power shopped today. Carla and I knocked out all the shopping in about 4 or 5 hours. We are, you know, a little tired, but hey, I am here. You are here. We are all here at the coaching staff. Just a heads up for everybody. Tony and I will be taking next week off, just spending time with family and enjoying some downtime over the Christmas break. But we will be back with a new and fresh episode in a couple of weeks. But this week we are on episode number 113, and we are going to talk about the aforementioned Christmas list, things that we wished would happen with the game of basketball, what we would like to see. I'll be interested to see what Tony has. A couple of these things I've talked about before. I know I have, you know, we'll see where we go here. But before we get to that, Tony, uniform number 13, we got some quarterbacks. We've got some baseball players here. Kurt Warner, Iowa native, former Hy-Vee employee. Dan Marino.
My Panther.
Yes, you and I saw him play senior year of his college career. One of my best friends, Kevin Klein Hesslink, was, I always say, I don't really say that he was going to school at Northern Iowa. I just say he was living in the dorms at the time at Northern Iowa.
Makes
we
sense.
and me and Moose and Meyer drove over there a couple of times, and Northern Iowa was really, really good that year. That was the Kurt Warner, Kenny Shedd, I think, played for the during that time. And
Made won the NFL for a while too.
yep. So got to see him play college. Didn't know obviously how good he was going to be until later, but Dan Marino, and then we got some baseballers here. Oh no, we got a wide receiver, Mike Evans of the Tampa Bay Bucks, still active. Alex Rodriguez, Roberto Clemente wore number 13. So yeah, so but I've got about seven basketballers here, either Hall of Famers or they will be in the Hall of Fame. One, two, only two. Oh no, sorry. No, yes, two are active. Five are retired, Tony.
Man, unlucky 13, and I'm stumped trying to think of a basketballer that wears 13 because of the whole superstition thing. I didn't think many would.
Well, I'll give you a hint on the two active players. As
Okay.
recently as last season, they were teammates.
As recently as last. Oh, let's go with Paul George because of the
Yep.
PG-13 thing.
There you go.
Okay. And so, the other guy would have been the Clippers because that's where they were both for last season.
Rubbing my fingers on my chin, but if I were this guy, I'd
Let's
have.
go, James Harden.
There you go. There you go. James Harden. So those are our two active guys. I've got a center, a point guard, two point guards, a small forward, and a power forward. So this would be a pretty good starting five, Tony.
Okay. Center that wore 13.
Let's just say he scored a lot both on and off the floor.
Wilt Chamberlain.
There we go. Thank you for the double entendre.
Two point guards.
Both of them former NBA coaches, and they kind of washed out as NBA coaches.
NBA coaches. Mark Jackson.
Yes.
Okay.
Other
Number
one, more
13.
recent.
Ooh, more recent.
From Canada, eh?
Steve Nash.
You betcha. There you go. Power forward, Chicago Bulls.
13 power forward, Chicago.
Back-to-back national champion in college.
Noah.
Joakim Noah. Yep. And then the last one here. From our time in college, don't want to run with the big dogs.
Glenn Robinson.
There he is, Glenn Robinson. There you go. Those are number
Better
13s.
college player than pro player.
Yeah, well, he solid pro, but just
Yes.
yeah. Unfulfilled pro career. How about that,
There
Tony?
you go.
Yeah,
I
thank
like
you.
that
Yeah,
description.
there we go. So, Christmas wish list, Tony. What are things we would like to see with the game change happen, whatever it may be? I think I got about 10 things listed, Tony. You want me to go first?
With as many as you have, we better.
Okay. I wish, and we're getting closer to having this wish fulfilled. I wish that there was a shot clock everywhere in the United States, a uniform shot clock, every state. Every high school team had a either 30 or 35 second shot clock. Whatever it is, 30 or 35, don't care, but have everybody have a shot clock. We finally have it in all classes here in Nebraska this year. I know in Iowa, you've had it for 3 or 4 years, I think.
A couple of years, this third year of it.
Third year. Yep. So, that's one that's getting closer and closer to being fulfilled.
You know, and my buddy Adam DeJody, he used to be an assistant coach at Northern Iowa. He was the one that really kind of got me on this path to see it because, you would be up five, I'm sorry, up 10 points, 5, 6 minutes to go. And the next thing you know, the other team's pulling the ball out and you're going Carolina four corners, whatever you want to call it. And it just breaks the flow of the game. It turns into a free throw shooting contest. And he was like, you know, if you have a shot clock, you can play that out. The flow stays with it. There's more strategy. And yes, I think the shot clock is great. We had our first shot clock violation that we had on Tuesday against Cedar Falls. We had not had a shot clock violation in 2+ years, and then just lost track of it and ended up with getting a shot clock violation first time in 2+ years, but absolutely love having a shot clock.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed. It's better for the, you know, it's not intended to be a 26 minute game or a 28 minute game. It's intended to be a 32 minute game. And just because you have a 4-point lead with 4 minutes left to go doesn't mean you need to end the entire game. And so I think that's a great thing. So that's my first one there, Tony. What do you got, buddy?
My first one would be a youth development program. I take a look, and again, I'm not bashing the AAU model, but you take a look at the fact that you play, you know, a bunch of games every week and you hardly ever practice. I just think that model is messed up. I think it needs to be a lot more practice, a lot fewer games, and focus on skill development. You sit here and you wonder, why are the Europeans taking the majority of the first round draft pick selections? A big part of it is that because we in America play a lot of games and don't focus as much on development. And so I think we need to go back to more of a youth development program.
Tony, you're freaking me out because I was literally second on my list, essentially. Flip our AAU system to the European system, minimum 4-to-1 practices to game. That's what I wrote down, and I cannot agree with you enough. I think in Europe, it's supposed to, I think they try to do 6-to-1, you know, which brings me, and again, there's no better way I could say it, so I'm not even going to try to, but that brings me to my third thing on my list, Tony. And you know why? The reason why they have so many AAU games, Tony, so people can make money. And you know how they make money, Tony? They price gouge you at the entrance to AAU events. This needs to stop. This needs to change. You have these parents paying literally, in some cases, thousands and thousands of dollars, not to mention travel expenses, hotel, food, all this other stuff that, oh, by the way, yeah, $50 per person, weekend pass, you know. It is criminal. It is absolutely criminal. What is going on with all of this? And you know, preach it to the choir in a lot of different ways, but this is fundamentally wrong, completely flawed. I understand that you want to make a little bit of money. I'm a capitalist at heart. I get it, but there's being a capitalist and then there's taking advantage of people. And this is 1000% taking advantage of people, and the price gouging has to stop.
100% agree on that. You know, and the crazy thing, they also get you with parking on the top of that. And it's just, it's nuts. You throw a wheat or you throw something on there and it's false advertisement first off, but then you sit there and you gouge people. And one of the things I oftentimes sit there and wonder is if parents took all their money that they put towards travel ball, whether that's basketball, softball, baseball, you know, 7-on-7 football, whatever. Mm-hmm. Volleyball was probably the worst. But anyway,
yeah.
If you put that in some type of IRA and kept putting what you would pay each year, you could probably pay for their college multiple times over.
Mm-hmm. There was a parent here in Omaha, this was a while ago, but the kid was a Division I volleyball player, and they totaled up with all the money that they spent on club volleyball from the time they were in fifth grade till the time that they graduated, they could have paid for their daughter's college debt-free. Like, they just could have paid for it in cash. Now, this kid was good enough that she ended up getting the scholarship at the end of it. But I mean, it's kind of a moot point though, isn't it? I mean, yeah. And it's that fine line, Tony. You know, I've said it before. High school coaches need AAU and kids to play AAU to develop their skills so that you can be successful as a high school team. But when it becomes so expensive, so over the top, ridiculous, you know, at what point are we losing our sanity a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt about it. A lot of gouging and a lot of taking advantage of going on. in that arena, you know, as far as the whole travel bowl stuff goes.
Yep. As we enter into this holiday season, coaches, you know what would make a great gift for you this year? It would be a copy of Kings of Their Court, the story of the 2020-2021 season here in Omaha, three ranked teams in the top 25 in the country. And you're going to hear the personal and professional stories of players like Hunter Salas and Chucky Hepburn, Frankie Fiddler, William Kyle, coaches like Tim Cannon, Josh Ludke, and Doug Woodard. Just a terrific, terrific story, a crazy time period in our country with quarantine, politics, George Floyd, and everything in between. Yours for only $19.99. Go to Amazon, go to books, look up Kings of Their Court, and order a copy of that today. It's going to be a great stocking stuffer for you, for somebody that you love. Tell your wife, tell your spouse, tell your kids, hey, I would love to have a copy of this book and have something to read here and to just read about a great basketball story. Kings of Their Court, available on Amazon.com today. What do you have next up, Tony?
My next one, I'm a big advocate of social-emotional learning. And one of the things I take a look at with kids today, and you see the fighting and you see the whatever, and you can kind of tell there's some pressure, there's some high-stakes stuff that kids really are not handling well. And I think one of the things that we need to put in there would be some mental conditioning to incorporate psychology into training to improve our players' decision-making under pressure, to build up their mental toughness. And again, I think those are things that would be really, really important to help young people out. And again, it's not just a basketball thing, but I would love to see that become a part of the curriculum educationally as well as extracurricularly. And so that would be another piece of my wish list there.
Mm-hmm. Tony, you're kind of freaking me out because we're to a degree, we're following this step by step here. So it's not exactly that, but it is related to it. Mandatory training levels for all coaches, very similar to what they do with European football. And this is another thing that Europeans do better than us. They all together prepare and educate their coaches better than we do in the United States. And if that offends you, I'm sorry. But at the same time, that's why a pen and a napkin is here, trying to be that, you know, one of the things I've tried to describe a pen and a napkin is, you know, I just want to be the middle of the wheel of the bicycle and have all this stuff come out of it. You know, I'm just part of it, but all these spokes are coming in and coming out of it. And the whole purpose is to help coaches get better. The whole reason why I started doing this was I wish I would have had something that would have specifically dealt with my situation or situations that I dealt with as a high school coach in my first go around. That's what drove this whole thing. And it is to a large, unless you are self-motivated to help yourself, to listen to podcasts, to watch videos, to go to coaches' clinics, to talk to other coaches, to really educate yourself. And you and I are both highly driven guys that did that. And a lot of coaches are, but a lot of them are not. And again, a lot of that is at the youth level in these formative years. Kids, when you have a coach, I did a deal a couple of years ago. Well, it was probably about 5 years ago, Tony, where I got paid to sit there for a weekend and run a scorer's table for a tournament here in town. And I think it was through like junior NBA or something like that. And you had these guys coaching sixth graders, seventh graders, and they're MFing on the sideline and, you know, funk this and funk that and all these different things. And you're just like, they're 12, they're 13. I mean, come on, you know, and it's just, and there's a lot of good youth coaches out there. Again, painting with such a broad brush, but I think it would just help. And I know USA Basketball is trying to do that when I work USA Gold Camps, you know, you have to qualify for it. You have to put in the time to educate yourself. Same thing with Snow Valley, a lot of different things. You know, we need to educate our coaches better in a mandatory type of way. And a lot of coaches don't want to do that, but those are the coaches that are usually end up in trouble a lot of times as well.
Yeah. And it's one of those things, like anything, the time when you stop trying to grow and learn and you stagnate is probably time to get out. You know, and you want to make sure that you try to be the best possible coach that you can and just keep learning. And there's so many different ways to do that. Like you've mentioned, podcasts and things online, YouTube, whatever the case may be. But you have to have a little bit of motivation to you, have a little bit of gumption to you, and not be satisfied with where you are.
What do you got, buddy?
You know, another one that I would throw at you, I know you mentioned shot clock earlier, and I'm going to be honest, I think 35, I would like to see it down. I would like to see it, whether it's 30 or whether we go to the NBA model at 24, but I just think it would be nice to have a uniform shot clock throughout. And by what I mean throughout is high school, college, you know, professional, international, whatever, but have a shot clock that is consistent throughout. And I would really like to see that. And the other thing, take a look at too, is sometimes with those offensive rebounds, I mean, you go back and you reset the shot clock all the way back. And I know they've changed that both at the professional and collegiate level, might be something to consider high school as well. But the one thing I will say is I know that the shot clock is a lot harder to run. And if all of a sudden you put in all these different rules with it, you might run across some issues there, but it would be nice to have a uniform shot clock.
Yeah. I think 30 would kind of be the best place for high school and college. I think if we just put everybody at 30, AAU at 30, I mean, and don't give me, well, we can't afford it for our AAU tournament. Well, if you're charging people $65 to sit there for the weekend, you can afford somebody to run a clock at the table. All right. So sorry, again, sarcasm. Not really. Yeah, I agree with you there. I think 30 would be a good, would that be where you would settle at, Tony?
Yeah, I think 30 is good for us at our, you know, at the high school level. You know, like I said, we've had one violation in 2+ years. I think we could knock 5 seconds off. And most of our games, it never becomes an issue. I mean, we get up a shot within 15, 20 seconds. You know, as you get a little bit later in the game and you're up, you know, the aforementioned 10 with 3-4 to play, we might run 25 to 30 seconds off the clock and go, you know, with a quick hitter there over the last 5 to 8 seconds. But yeah, I think 30 would be a good point for everybody to kind of agree on.
Mm-hmm. It's 35 in Iowa, isn't it?
Yeah, it is 35 with us, yeah.
And off the offensive rebound, it resets to 35.
Resets all the way to 35,
yeah. Gotcha, okay. All right. Here's something, Tony, and I don't... I believe for high school coaches, administrators are going to say what they want. You know, it's not about winning, blah, 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 but baloney, it is, especially, you know, at the varsity level, especially, you know. So if you are going to if you are going to not emphasize winning and you feel like you have a good person, you have a good coach, so forth and so on, I firmly believe that you should have multi-year contracts for high school coaches. I think it gives them a sense of security. I think it puts some onus and responsibility. You either know where you stand or you don't know where you stand. And if you want to make it like a deal where, okay, at the start here, we're going to give you 3 1-year contracts, but if you're here 3 years and we're still happy with you, we could talk about signing a 2-year coaching contract or a 3-year coaching contract or something along those lines. And as a coach, you also have a responsibility. Hey, if you, let's say you signed a 3-year contract, you've committed to the district for 3 years and you decide to go somewhere else after 1 year, then you owe them 2 years worth of stipend. I mean, or something like that. There's verbiage that you can work out there, Tony, and find a way. But I really do not think it is fair to a lot of high school coaches to only have a 1-year contract, year after year after year after year. I think that Again, if your administration is going to stand behind you, you go in and you ask for support, and they say they will support you. And I'm not talking, you know, this is something I hear from a lot of coaches that reach out to me about this type of stuff. But I just believe that. I just believe that if you're going to have those demands, those time demands, though, that effort, that, you know, et cetera, then give the coach some security as well to know, okay, if I have a bad year, I still know I have 2 years of a stipend. And this is not like the Division I coach at Michigan. You know, you're not Juwan Howard and you get let go, but you still got 2 years and $10 million on your contract. You're going to be okay. Michigan's going to pay you that. You know, if you're a high school coach, and I know, especially when we were younger, Tony, when our kids were 4, 5, 6 years old, my coaching stipend was a big part of our family budget. We, you know, to a degree, I loved it to coach. I was there for all the right reasons. But I needed that $5,000 or $6,000 a year to help us get by on a monthly basis. So I just think that, you know, if you are not renewed as a coach at the high school level, it has a much bigger financial impact on you than it does a and again, I'm just using Juwan Howard as an example, but any coach at the big time collegiate or professional level, you know. So that's another one for me.
Okay. Another one that I would like to see is the size of the ball. And what I'm talking about there, I mean, if you go through and take a look, you know, as far as like hand size and strength and stuff like that, I think that's a big part of why some of the younger ones get frustrated is they're playing with a regular size ball, if especially on the girls' side of things, as they go through. And I think that's a tough thing. And they develop maybe where they dip below the waist and do some different things as far as shooting fundamentals that really caused them to struggle then and then later on. And so I really would like to see a youth basketball at 27.5. And then, you know, as you get to junior high, 28.5. Yeah. And then you can graduate on the guy side of things up to a regular size ball as you get into high school. But I would like to see those. And then the other thing to kind of keep in mind as well with that whole thing is with the younger kids, an adjustable hoop, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's 9 feet in yep. third, fourth, fifth grade, whatever the case may be. But I would like to see some of those changes implemented as well.
You know, one thing that kind of that just having it, you know, an age appropriate setting for the kids to develop. You know, Kelly Flynn had this thing, and I can't remember if he told me this on the pod, you know, when he was guest number one or whatever it was. But with his youth kids, he would say, if you hit the rim, you got 1 point when they were like, you know, third, fourth, like fifth grade, maybe. And then after sixth grade, it actually had to go in to count. But I'm like, that's a genius idea. You know, hey, at least I hit the rim, 1 point. Here we go. You know, type of a thing. So I think those adjustments to the rules for your youth kids, I think those are outstanding ideas. So another one for me, Tony, I'd like to see, and kind of relating to the last thing that I talked about, larger stipends. I think with the time and the effort and the energy and the demands that are put on us, I think we, as high school coaches, deserve a little bit more money. I think we do across the board. And it's not just basketball coaches. It's football coaches. It's volleyball coaches. It's the one-act coach. It's, you know, I mean, I just think I don't know how much I don't know how much the rate of a coach's stipend has kept up with the demands of the job. You know, even 20, 25 years ago, you would coach your season and then you would do a couple of team camps in the summer. And that'd be about it. I mean, you weren't doing it, but now it's in the, you know, and I'm sure it's the same thing when you're at Kennedy, and I'm kind of relating this more to my bigger school experience, but you coach your season, then you spend time in the spring working with kids that aren't out for a spring sport. Then you're spending the summer doing workouts and weight room and going to team camps and summer leagues and different things like that. Then you get a little bit of break, but then you get into fall and probably around Labor Day, you start lifting and conditioning and doing individual workouts with kids and skill works and things like that. And I just think that the rate of investment in your time and effort and energy is not matched by the, and I know none of us get into it for the money, but I think that what is asked of us, I think we should be getting paid more, you know?
Yeah, I know some went back and put in the amount of hours they put in throughout the year. And I want to say they were telling me they got paid like 34 cents an hour.
Oh, geez.
And everything was said and done. You know, all the stuff you're talking about going from, you know, your season to outside the season to summer to open gyms and so on and so forth, that they broke it down and was basically 34 cents an hour. And, you know, and so I would go with that. And I would say, you know, that's where I'm going to drop the mic at. Yep. And you should not expect someone to put in that much time and get 34 cents an hour. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Now, if it were 42 cents an hour, then that guy has got nothing.
Yes, complaining. They got nothing.
Absolutely. That's a gumball at the Pizza Ranch right there. So, what do you got? What else you got, buddy?
You know, I kind of alluded to this earlier with the shot clock coming in with, you know, a uniform set of rules. And that's my thing. You know, if we're going to do the FIBA stuff, and that's going to be kind of the Olympics and the world championships and so on and so forth, and that's the measuring stick, then that needs to be the rules throughout. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, four different 3-point lines painted on the floor, not a squared lane for high school and college and a, you know, trapezoid or whatever shape it happens to be at the international level.
Yeah.
But one set of rules. I think that would be a really nice thing to get to at the best, you know, throughout. And again, not that there can't be some minor differences, but we've got, you know, like goaltending and at the international level, it hits the rim and you can take it off the rim. Can't do that. High school can't do that. Collegially can't do it in the NBA. And so we just need something, you know, shot clock, basket interference, the size and shape of the lane. There needs to be something that's consistent because those are big things. And you take a look when our NBA players go out to play, there's a few month learning curve for them.
Yeah.
As they've got, and you still see them sometimes in the competitions, whether it's the Olympics or the World Championships, they have some brain freeze on them because is that the NBA rule? Is that the FIBA rule? And mm-hmm. So just coming up with one uniform set would be nice.
Tony, think how different your career would have been if you would have been able to offensively goaltend.
Yeah, if I get to grab the net and, you know, hung on to it, set the ball down. Yes, that would have been awesome.
Give me a second. I got to pull myself up here.
Hold on.
Go get this thing. what do you think about this idea, Tony? And I know this is a crazy idea, and I don't know how much you can actually follow through with this. All right, but I think it would be an idea to explore if you forced your parents. And again, I'm not just talking about basketball; I'm talking about any sport, any activity. Your parents had to for their child to participate in the activity, they had to sign a parental code of conduct. You know, and whatever goes into that, you know, and you know. Obviously, from the coach's angle, unless we feel like there is, you know, let's say some sort of abuse, physical or verbal abuse, we are not going to talk about our coach with any administrators or anything like that. Or, we are not going to, we are going to be good sportsmen and women in the stands. We're not going to complain about the officiating. We're not going to put stuff on social media. I don't know what all different things that you could do. And I don't know exactly what would be in there, but just a parental, you know, if your child is going to participate in this activity, you have to sign this code of conduct and you have to adhere to it. You expect your kids to do it on the floor. You expect the coaches to do it during practice and games. You expect your administration to do it. Well, you're part of this equation too. You're part of the formula to make this a positive experience. You need to do this as well. And you are part of this. So I don't know if that's a crazy idea or if that's got any legs at all, but I thought that popped into my head as I was putting down my wish list here, Tony.
Be an interesting one. I mean, there'd be need to be developed a little bit further, but that would be an interesting one to put some of those things in practice and in play.
Yeah. Yep. I got one more big one and then two other ones that are, you know, kind of a little bit of a throwaway, but I'll throw them out there if you want me to. So what do you got left, buddy?
I got one left. And okay. So I'll throw this one out there. And I kind of touched on this earlier a little bit with the size of the basketball. But another thing I would like to see as well, you know, I really take a look at participation, and it's going down both genders, but more so girls than guys. And I think one of the big things would be to help them out with some type of technology. And there are basketballs out there that can help players to measure their accuracy, their force, the arc on the ball, and different things like that, which I think can help them make better shooters. And when you take a look at it, I think that's one of the big things, how people gauge whether or not they're a good player. One of the very first things, how many points did I score? And again, I get there's so much more to that. And as coaches, we have to do a better job of pointing out those other areas as well, because you play a lot more with the ball out of your hands than you do with the ball in your hands. But if we got kids that could make shots at a pretty high level, number one, the product's better. Number two, they're going to have a better experience. And so if we can get some smart basketballs out there that are affordable to all levels, to all, you know, teams and different things like that, I think that's really going to help the game. And so that's another one. I would like to see some type of technology that aids in improving shooting percentages. And I think if that was, you know, made affordable and accessible to everyone, I really think that that's a big impact. And I get, you know, Tony, hey, you can get into a gym with a, you don't need to have this smart basketball. I completely understand that. And like we talked about earlier with coaches, you have to have a little gumption, you have to have a little bit of motivation and different things like that. But let's be honest, kids are running all over the place with all their different activities and stuff that they're doing. And if we could do something like this, I think it helps to make the product better, like I said, and gives them a better experience, which is more important in my mind.
Mm-hmm. My last three here, they're kind of throwaways a little bit. And I'm only going to bring up one because the other one really doesn't have to do it. The other two don't really have anything to do with coaching. But you know what's on my wish list, Tony? And again, this is no offense to anybody who chooses to go this route. This is just Marty Plum. This is the guy that would much rather go to Fenway or Wrigley than go to you know, some newfangled stadium somewhere, you know, even if they're trying to be retro or something like that. I want to go back to the days where we're dressing up on the sideline, where we're wearing the ties, where we, it's an event. And that's just me going back to the 80s and watching John Thompson and Patino and a lot of different coaches there. I would still say, even last year, I would say 85% of the time I wore a tie while I was coaching. I could just never get into the quarter zip thing just because, you know, going a little Connie Mack maybe on you here, baseball reference, you know, but I don't know. I just like seeing a good a coach looking good on a sideline, dressed up, you know, just making the game a bit of an event. And that's just me. I know it's never coming back, but That's just me, Tony.
That's a fair point. That's what you think. Then yeah, you gotta have an opinion.
Yeah. Are you a quarter zip guy, Tony?
It depends. You know, I'll be honest. If it's if we're playing like back to back, it might be a quarter zip. I've kind of foregone the tie on occasion, like a senior night here and there. I might pop a tie on. Mm-hmm. Not that I wear sweats or anything like that, but at the same time, to those that do, that's completely up to them and that's their choice. But I agree. I think it is good when you see a staff that is, you know, dressed similarly. Mm-hmm. And then they you know, and dress sharp, you know, with dress pants and different things like that would be my preference. But at the same time, teach them.
Mm-hmm. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Coaches, you know just as well as I do that we're always looking for new and different ways to motivate our players and programs. But sometimes it's hard to find that perfect source that we're looking for. Over the past 25 years, I've collected hundreds of handouts to help motivate my players and programs. And now I'd like to share some of my favorites with you. The A Pen and a Napkin 101 Best Handouts booklet is now available to you for only $15. In this booklet, you'll find motivational material for all types of situations and individuals to help you communicate your values to your players and program. For ordering information, you can either DM me on Twitter or email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com for details. Well, Tony, we talked about looking good there. You know who has looked good for over four decades?
Obviously, the band Europe.
Been looking good for four decades. I was listening to a Casey Kasem countdown this weekend from like 1987, and there was a little Europe on there. I think it was Cherokee Marching on the Trail of Tears. Yeah. So good stuff. Yeah, that's a good one. So, Tony, it is your turn for trivia. We iron this out, folks. Tony has the one singular trivia question this week. Mr. Viss, what do you have for me this week?
I was doing some research today because it's like, crap, I really actually got to look one up. And so I saw that Alex Caruso, who was with the Lakers, then went to the Bulls, now is on the Thunder, signed a four-year, $81 million extension. Now, as I was doing my research, I learned more, and I think I knew this, but was reminded of it, that Alex Caruso was an undrafted player out of Texas A&M. Yep. And so I went down this rabbit hole for a little bit. Who was the first undrafted player in NBA history to make an all-star team?
Oh, wow. This is a good one. Can you at least narrow it down to a decade, like 80s, 90s, whatever?
Early 2000s.
Oh, okay. Undrafted. Oh, man. 2000s. This is just a stab in the dark. I don't think I'm right. Michael Redd.
Michael Redd is a good guess, but you are correct in the fact that it is wrong.
Okay. I am correct in the fact that it is wrong. Okay. God, this is a good one. Brad Miller.
Brad Miller, another good guess, but Brad was not the first one.
Oh, okay. Oh, so the okay.
I don't know. I think Brad might have got drafted.
Okay.
At a bowl, I remember correct.
Okay. Wade Lookingville played earlier than that. No, not him. I don't know. You got me. I don't know. I can't even come up with a third guess.
Ben Wallace of the Detroit Pistons,
nice.
In 2003, first undrafted player to be voted an NBA All-Star. It goes on and adds he played the most career games of any undrafted player with 1,088 in his 15 seasons that he played. He obviously was an NBA champion, four-time All-Star, was also a four-time winner of the NBA Defensive Player of the Year Award. So had a pretty prestigious career coming out of, I want to say, Virginia Union.
Yep. Right? D2.
Yeah, D2, but undrafted. And like I said, Ben Wallace is the answer to that one.
That was a good one, Tony. That was a difficult question, but it was also you know, something that you could definitely get if you know what's going on. I think if you were to sit down with Mel Allen and you gave him that question, he'd say,
"How about that?"
So, yeah, you know, that's a pretty solid transition. That was pretty good. You know, Milwaukee wins the NBA Cup this week, Tony. They end up beating Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City kind of lays an egg on the big stage here. Obviously it's just one game. Technically, it doesn't count for anything other than winning a artificially created tournament in the middle of the season. But who does this mean? Let me ask you this, Tony. Who do you think this means more for? Milwaukee kind of riding the ship after a terrible start, or is Oklahoma City just still maybe not quite ready for the bright lights?
I think it's a little bit of both. Because, I mean, if you take a look, Oklahoma City is not playing on Christmas Day.
Yep.
And they're a stacked young team that's really good, and they're dealing with some injuries. Obviously, Chet's not playing, so I mean, I can't throw the book at them that hard. But at the same time, I do think it says more about the Bucks, who people wrote off for dead early on in the season, and now is kind of like a phoenix sprung back to life there. And I'm sure if you're a Philadelphia 76ers fan, you're hoping that fate may come upon you as well.
Yeah, the Bucks have kind of turned it around. One of the key cogs to this, Tony, a fella from your area, people are calling him Dairy Bird, AJ yes. Green from Northern Iowa, just about an hour or so north of you there. Speaking on undrafted players, kind of bet on himself coming out of Northern Iowa, and he has been a really important rotation player for them, kind of stabilized some perimeter minutes for him, and he's shooting it really well. So he's been a real key addition here for the Bucks, as they've kind of inserted him. I think it was a Pat Connaughton that they took, you know, he kind of took his minutes away from him. And I think it says more about the Bucks than it is about the Thunder. I think the Thunder are going to be right there at the very end of it. And you know, don't discount Chris Middleton is coming back as well. And who knows where he'll be, but you know, he's going to be a key third. You know, we know how important he's going to be, and as he works his way back into things. But I'm not going to get too worked up over one game. I think the Thunder are going to be there in the end. But I agree with you. I think the Bucks have kind of played their way back into this, and I think it's more of a compliment to the Bucks than it is a slight to the Thunder. That's what happened the other night. So, Dennis Schroeder to the Golden State Warriors, kind of a good pickup. I think this clears the way for probably another trade, in my guesstimation, by the Warriors. I think now that they've got Schroeder, that, you know, we could see like Pajemski and Kuminga moving on and combining this and narrowing down this strength in numbers from 11 or 12 guys to, you know, here's our nine solid dudes that we're going to roll with, and Schroeder's going to be a big part of that. What do you think, buddy?
100% agree. You take a look at things. Schroeder was having a career year, and I think the Nets obviously saw that. Like, hey, man, you're hurting our chances of getting Cooper Flagg. We got to get this cat out of here.
And we're going to sell high as well.
Yes. And I wouldn't necessarily say that Golden State fleeced them, but DeAnthony Melton was a part of that deal, and then a bunch of second round picks. And I thought Schroeder could have netted them more than what he did, but I think they needed to move him quickly because he was shooting a career high from 3-point. I believe it was just under 19 points a game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you take a look at pairing him with Steph and letting Steph play off the ball a little bit, because I think you address one of the things is Pods is not as good as what they thought he was. You know, mm-hmm. He had a really good rookie year, and I think they expected more out of him this year. And he has not been the answer that he thought. And I think they're playing maybe more. And Kuminga is putting up better numbers than he had. But I think they know that Jonathan's not that piece that they need. And like you said, let's get this thing down from 11 or 12 to 9. Steph and Draymond are definitely on the last few years of their career. And let's make one more attempt at glory.
Yep, yep. Big game last night, Tony. UConn and USC, a rematch of the regional final. I had forgotten that they had played in the regional final last year. Did not get a chance to see it because I was on a bus coming back from Des Moines. But USC goes into Connecticut and comes up with the 72-70 win. Just a big statement victory for USC, for Juju Watkins and that crew. They kind of righted the, quote unquote, righted the ship a little bit after, I can't remember who beat them, but I know it was a bit of a disappointing loss. No, this season, USC. Notre Dame. They got drilled by Notre Dame. Yep. And Notre Dame is proving to be pretty stinking good as well, I think we've got about 8 teams that could win a national championship on the women's side, Tony.
I think that's a fair assumption there. I mean, you take a look, I still think UCLA is really good. I would say they're a little bit better right now. I don't know if that will be the case at the end of the year, because sometimes, as we know, you maybe can peak a little bit too early. I don't think you want to underestimate South Carolina.
Yep.
I think obviously they're going to be a threat in the whole thing as well. I agree with you. I think there are about 8 teams. And I give USC a lot of credit, because going into UConn and winning, and they dominated that game for a long time. And then UConn came back, made a run at them, and credit to Juju. Not only a great scorer, Marty, but as you've watched her some as well, a really good passer. And so that was what put them back up after UConn had tied it. She got an assist. And then getting the gal from Stanford really gives them another star, and they got some other good transfers in there as well. But USC is a definite threat and a team that I think, don't get me wrong, they're obviously trying to win games, going to UConn and win at UConn. But I think they understand that they've got bigger fish here in a few months.
Yeah, I got, just off the top of my head here, Tony, UCLA, USC, UConn, Texas, Notre Dame, LSU, South Carolina. I think you can make an argument for all of those teams. I think Duke and Maryland might be down another notch. So, but they can definitely knock off one of those teams, like let's say in a Sweet 16 type of game. You got 7 teams right there with 8 and 9 lurking at kind of that little notch below that I definitely think could make some noise here in March and cut down the nets in April without a doubt. So
Marty, did you mention Texas?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I mentioned Texas.
Yep, I guess that's another one I think that's right there. Out of the teams that you mentioned that I might not be as on board with because they really haven't played anybody, and not saying I can't get on board eventually, but LSU I think has played Cupcake U, and so that would maybe be the one I would put down towards the end of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think Tennessee is a very interesting team with Coach Caldwell, and the way they shoot the three and their style of play is very unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bracketology has Tennessee actually hosting the first weekend now, so they got them in the top 16. So, that's interesting stuff there. So, last thing, Tony, kind of in between you and I is a guy named TJ Otzelberger, he's gonna be buying some real estate in the Ames, Iowa area if he hasn't already, because he got a pretty nice contract extension here. It's great to see a guy who has roots, who is not looking for the next shiny new thing. And who's to say? I mean, these guys can get out of contracts whenever they like. But he's an Iowa State guy through and through. His wife is a legend at Iowa State on the women's side of things with Coach Finley. And I think that I think it's a really good thing for college basketball.
I would agree. Like you said, I was listening to Scott Frost, from your neck of the woods. We went back to Central Florida, and as you said, as you're climbing the ladder to success, nobody told him to stop when you're happy. Mm-hmm. And I think TJ learned that, and he learned it. He was an assistant at Iowa State, saw how special the place was to him. You mentioned his wife, Allison Lacey, affectionately known as Oz, from being from Australia, coming and playing at Iowa State. But yes, Bleed Cyclone Red, and went to, you know, different spots, UNLV being one of them, for getting his dream job. Realizes, stop climbing, you're happy. And so, yeah, I think he might be able to buy us Arby's.
If he really wants to splurge, he could take us to the Pizza Ranch buffet.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he does have that kind of money.
Yeah, yes, he does. Coaches, by now you have seen the newest thing coming out of a pen and a napkin, the opening tip, Substack newsletter. I put an edition out there for free, and hopefully you see what a great investment this is going to be for you as a coach. I'm guessing it probably is, if you watch everything and listen to everything, it's going to take you almost 3 hours to get through everything on the opening tip newsletter here. What do we have in there? You've got an original article by myself here, just thoughts, ideas on different coaching topics. Into the Lab, that's probably my favorite thing, is the Into the Lab. It's me, another coach, and a whiteboard, and we're just drawing stuff up here. Stuff to help you out, to help you become better, and to help your team become better this coming season and beyond. Got another exclusive podcast. You heard the first one, Industriousness from the Wooden Pyramid of Success, and it's me and it's two semi-retired former girls basketball coaches, Matt Kern of York, Nebraska, Nate Wall of David City Aquinas here in Nebraska, and every newsletter, we're going to break down an aspect of Wooden's Pyramid of Success. Bookshelf recommendations from off the bookshelf, X's and O's stuff. I'm dropping in a university video. It's just going to be given to you there. You know, and I really believe in the products that I've put together. It's practical stuff that's going to help make you a better coach. And then we've got the Coach's Corner with links to clips and articles. As you saw, we had our two Olympic coaches, Steve Kerr and Cheryl Reeve. Just really, really good stuff here. And I know it's subscription-based, but goodness gracious sakes alive, as Coach Wooden would say, it is so affordable. $8 a month for two newsletters. That's $4 every newsletter. That's $2 every single week. Or you can get a year-long subscription, $75. That's 24 editions of the newsletter. That's basically $3 a newsletter. That's basically a dollar an hour if it takes you about 3 hours to get through everything that you're getting here. It could not be more affordable. It could not be more positive for you. It's going to help make you a better coach. So subscribe to the Opening Tip newsletter. Folks, you're not going to regret it. You know who else has that type of money, Tony, if you know what I'm saying? It's George Jefferson. Who is up for you this week, Tony?
You know, we talked about them earlier, but I think they need their flowers still, and that's the Milwaukee Bucks. Last week when we were talking, we both picked Oklahoma City to take them down.
Yep.
And not only did they not get beat, they beat Oklahoma City convincingly, held them to 81, if I remember correctly. So I believe we have to give the flowers one more time to the Milwaukee Bucks. And going back to, you mentioned AJ Green there. You know, Cedar Falls High School, we played them this last Tuesday. They've had quite a run of point guards. You have AJ Green, who's obviously an NBA. Trey Campbell is the starting point guard at UNI. There's another really, really good player that they have, and a good, really good point guard right now on their team at Cedar Falls as well. He's also a state champion golfer. He's going to go play golf at UNI. They have a freshman kid by the name of Carson Gary. That'll be a name to keep an eye on. I believe he's a Division I player as well. As a freshman, he's up and playing varsity already. And so shout out to Cedar Falls, shout out to AJ Green, and a bigger shout out to the Milwaukee Bucks.
I'm going to keep my shout outs in the state of Iowa, Tony. My up this week out of Storm Lake St. Mary's High School is a guy by the name of Ben McCollum, who has led the Drake Bulldogs to an 11-0 start. And he's got four guys that started for him at Northwest Missouri State, where my daughter goes to college. They've had a couple cupcakes, but they've beaten Kansas State, they've beaten Miami, they've beaten Florida Atlantic, who was in the Final Four 2 years ago. Ben McCollum has already started at Drake, what he did at Northwest Missouri. I'd love to see it keep going here for him. And obviously, to a degree, he had a foundation built with Darren DeVries, but when Darren DeVries left to go to West Virginia, almost everybody went their separate ways. And I think all but two of his players are new at Drake. So not only to still be undefeated as of December 22nd, but to do that in such a fashion is really, really impressive.
Yes, and you want to know the crazy thing, Marty, is he brought four of those kids, like you mentioned, from Northwest Missouri State. The point guard who was at Northwest Missouri last year was the best, but he graduated. Otherwise, he would have been with them at Drake as well. So what a loaded Division II team, because basically four of those guys are at Drake, part of the 11-0 thing. Bennett Sturts is really, really good. Wanted to play at Kansas State, and the other night when they beat Kansas State, guess who hit the three to win it? And it starts.
Yeah, really, really impressive. So, Tony, who's down for you?
I'm just going to go NBA ratings is what I'm going with down. I believe I read that it's down 48%. There's been a variety of ideas that have been put out there, and none other than Charles Barkley had a really good recommendation of the day. Don't start the NBA season until Christmas or after. Yeah. And I agree, because they can't right now. They cannot compete with the NFL. They cannot compete with college football. It's 82 games, which is probably more than this, but at least 20 games too long. And I believe that's a part of it right there. And then some have talked about, I know Bill Simmons on his podcast talked about the NBA League Pass jacking that price up, because that's a part that's hurting it a little bit as well.
Yeah.
And so there's some different suggestions out there to improve the product. And, you know, they're studying, do they shoot too many threes? Short answer, yes. But yeah, I mean, they've got to do something, because you can't have your ratings dip that much and not make some type of adjustments. Otherwise, you're doing the very definition of insanity, which is doing the same thing over, expecting a different result.
I think there's a lot of things, you know, everybody wants to, the owners want to make money. The players want to make money. They're both making tremendous amounts of money. But the players want a shorter season, but the owners are like, well, we got to play 82 games if you want to get paid that much, and nobody wants to take a pay cut. You know, one of my two things on my Christmas list, you're freaking me out. I think you got your camera set up in my office here. Shorten the NBA season to 72 games, I think is a good thing. I think moving the NBA, the Emirates Cup tournament back to January and February would be a good thing. You know, the season is longer because the players were complaining about back-to-backs. Well, we still need to get 82 games in. If you don't want to play as many back-to-backs, that's fine. We're going to make the season, you know, 10 to 14 days longer, which means we've got to start earlier. You know, so I think there's a ton of different reasons for it. I think it's kind of the same reason to a degree, Tony, in our shortened attention span world, in our TikTok mentality. People just don't have the attention span to pay attention to an 82 game season anymore as well. And we are saturated. It's awesome for dorks like you and I, where we are saturated with basketball games that we can watch literally at all hours of the day. But at the same time, you know, there is that saturation point. It's you know, one of the things that I struggle with staying up on the baseball season is there's 162 games. Now, when I was a kid and I didn't have anything else going on, I was watching the Cubs play all the time. But with kids, with basketball, with a full-time job, with being married, all these other, it's hard for me to stay up for 162 games. And I've, you know, that's a big reason why I don't watch as much baseball as I used to, you know, and I think that's the reason why, like, college football, college basketball, even like Premier League soccer, it's easier to keep track of those teams because there's only 12 games in football, college football, 16 or 17, excuse me, in the NFL. There's 38 in the Premier League. You know, I think it's just easier in some ways to keep track of that. And the season is too long. You know, but what do you do? You know, what do you do to make up that revenue that everybody wants to make? So what's going to come first, the chicken or the egg?
It's a fair question.
Yeah. here's my down, Tony, this week, and related to my up, Mr. Doug Gottlieb. Who lost yesterday to the aforementioned undefeated Drake Bulldogs. He is now 2-11 or 2-12 at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. And let me be clear. I am a guy who, while I was coaching the last 4 years, was still doing podcasting, still doing stuff on the side with this. It did not take away anything from what I was doing as a basketball coach. I never felt like, oh man, my a pen and a napkin stuff is taking away from my ability to put together a quality practice plan or to watch the necessary film. If anything, the a pen and a napkin stuff was on the back burner compared to what I was doing for my basketball job. So I'm not saying that about Doug Gottlieb. And if he wants to do his radio show, I don't care. There's a lot of hours in the day. So be it. Do what you want to do. And if your employer is okay with that, go ahead. I don't care. But you got to respect every opponent. And this job is hard. Coaching is hard. And I think he, to a degree, probably thought, I'm going to come in here. I'm Doug Gottlieb. I'm really smart. And I'm just going to win like crazy. I don't know what he was thinking. I don't know the guy. And I also get that Wisconsin Green Bay is not a hotbed of men's basketball. You know, 3 years ago they were 3-29, and then Sundance Wicks comes in there last year and goes 18-14 before he goes back to Wyoming. I think Mr. Gottlieb is probably getting a big slice of humble pie right now. From Adam Schefter. It was, oh, that you want to talk about a mic drop. That was
put somebody in a body bag.
Yes. And he threw him over the edge into the Cedar River and he hit every rock all the way down the rapids, buddy. So I don't know. I mean, am I right? Am I wrong, Tony? What do you think?
I think you're spot on. You know, and again, there's a little bit more to the clip, and I think they took some of it out of context, but you can't call somebody nobody you. Yeah. Nobody wants to come in here and watch nobody you. It's 10 degrees outside. You can't do that. You know, we had a phrase a long time ago when I was back in Hudson, respect everyone, fear no one.
Yep.
And he definitely did not respect the Division II team that came in and beat him by 2 points. And they had lost, I don't remember what the losing streak's at, but it's a long losing streak. And you know, he had to suspend his leading scorer. He's had some issues. And I think it's been one of those things, like you said. Don't get me wrong, I don't think Doug came in and thought he was smarter than anybody and had all the answers. But I think he thought it was going to be easier than what it has been for him. This has been really hard. And it'll be interesting to see if Doug Gottlieb is the coach at Wisconsin Green Bay next year.
Yeah, it will be. So hope he gets it turned around. Hopefully it's a learning opportunity for him. But that's my down this week. So big down. So
big down.
Speaking of being down, I'm disappointed that we won't do this for a couple of weeks, Tony. But let's take some time off and let's enjoy our families. It's been a good run here. I wish you and Rita and the kids all the health and happiness that you can have here over the holiday season, and wish you nothing but hopefully get to see you in a couple of weeks.
I'm hoping to sneak down to Ames to see you, and similar holiday wishes and Merry Christmas to you, Carla, and the kids as well, and hopefully time to charge those batteries back up and get ready to be even a bigger and better version of yourself here in 2020.
I'm trying, buddy. I'm trying, as are you. So episode 113, our Christmas wish list. Hopefully folks have enjoyed it. I want to thank our sponsor, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, All-American Used Cars and Trucks here in Omaha. Coaches, everybody out there, have a great holiday season. Enjoy some downtime. Unplug for a few days. You know, make sure you listen to this podcast for an hour or so before you do that. Or while you're doing that, just sitting back, relaxing, just say, you know, to your spouse, to your loved ones, I just need 45 minutes, an hour or so to listen to these two morons talk here, you know, and, you know, we hope you are
better about yourself.
What's that?
They'll feel better about
this. Yes. Honey, anybody can do a podcast. Listen to these guys. that's what makes this awesome, because we've got a pretty big slice of humility ourselves. We know we're not that smart. So at least I know I'm not that smart. But it's so yes, Tony and I are planning on being at the Iowa State Utah women's game on January 5th. So if you plan on being there, give us a shout out either on Twitter or whatever, or email me or whatever, and let us know. That's kind of the plan right now. Maybe we could do a live podcast together, Tony. That'd be kind of fun. Yeah, during a game. Why is Coach Finley so mad? I don't know. but, you know, I hope folks have enjoyed this. I hope they enjoy everything that we do. I wish all of you nothing but the happiest of holidays. Safe travels to anybody who's going out on the roads or flying or doing any sort of traveling. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.